Welcome to the Green Lines Abundant Living Podcast on the Charisma Podcast Network. This podcast is produced to help guide you to think and live in spiritual abundance. Now, let's join Dr. Steve Green as we seek to be led by the Holy Spirit so we might lead others according to God's purpose.
Well, Andy Stanley wrote in his book called Visioneering that vision equals inspiration plus conviction plus action and determination plus completion. I like that notion, Andy, that we don't have vision if we can't complete anything. I've been too long as a pastor to know a lot of people have vision to start projects. I just didn't have enough of them around to finish them. I've learned that vision comes from heartbreak, that deep dissatisfaction with anything leads to deep thinking about what could be. When I see something that hurts me, I start to think about a way to fix it and to help and to contribute. Vision was implied when Jesus asked fishermen if they'd like to follow him and learn to fish for men. You know what struck me about that story and continues to every time I read it is that it was so instantaneous that I learned something about them that when they dropped their fishing nets and gear, that's big for a fisherman to drop his stuff and just run off and leave it. They had to have some inner hunger to do more, to go somewhere. And they had to say that thing in their life, like, is this all there is? Am I just put on earth to fish? Is that who I am? Maybe I could at least change my zip code. You know, I hope that when all is said and done in my life that I've done that, that I've at least changed my backyard, the people around me, the people that come into my life. I wonder how difficult it must be to live life without a vision for what could be. My guest today knows a lot about the vision that his wife had. She died in 2015, and his book is The Hurricane of Love, and it describes how Beth left a path of love as she powered through her life. You may remember Dan Wheeler from his 29 years on QVC. If you've ever turned your TV set on, at least back in the old days when only a few channels, you saw QVC early in the proliferation of stations. We're going to get to know Dan and his ministry today and learn a whole lot more about his special wife and the hurricane of love. So, Dan, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate you having me.
Well, I'm honored. I already gotten to know you a little bit and read this sections of your book. And I just fell in love with you. And I said, we got to talk to Dan. He's got something to say.
Oh, thank you. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
So I'm wowed right off the bat that anybody could stay 29 years at QVC. So I'd love to hear more about that experience. How did you make it 29 years?
Well, you know, it was a great company and they were so good to me, and especially through my wife's illness. She was sick for 3 years battling stage four cancer, and they were great. My boss would check in with me every week and say, how you doing? And there were times that last summer when she was not doing real well and I'd say, she's having a rough time, but I'm okay. I can come in and do my shifts. And he'd say, no, I've already taken you off the schedule. Your fellow hosts want to help you. They're glad to fill in for you. And so I was blessed to work for that company for 29 years.
Well, I also know a lot about them. I know that you don't stay long there if you're not really, really good. What do you think? What gift did God give you to be so excellent as a host?
Well, I've always felt like I just was good at being me. I mean, I wasn't good at trying to be somebody else. And on live TV, you can't try to be someone else. God only made one you. And I learned early on to, when I would make a mistake or when I would drop something, I would point it out and I would laugh at myself. And that sense of being real connected with the audience, and they would write me. I remember one day early in my career, I was trying to pour some pasta from a nonstick pan onto a plate. And I'm not very good in the kitchen. And I totally missed the plate. It went over the front of the desk and onto the studio floor. And the director was like, don't show it, don't show it. And I was like, wait, come here, bring the camera in. Look at this. Look what
I did. Of course you show it.
I said, this is a mess. This is how I cook. My kitchen looks like this. And you know, I got so many emails and so many letters saying, we loved that. You were real. Now we trust you.
Wow.
And I learned early on that that was a trust builder. So I used to train a lot of the new hosts and a lot of the new guests. And I'd say, look, you're going to make mistakes, but it's how you handle it. If you handle it right, those are your greatest moments and your greatest opportunities to build trust with the audience.
So the most important question I have here is how much of that product did you sell when you spilled the pasta?
Well, I don't know that particular product, but I know during the course of my career, I guess the number was close to $4 billion worth of merchandise. Oh,
so the $4 billion man, the voice and the talent with that goes behind it.
Well, it was God. He's good. And he blessed my wife and my family with that. And I just want to make sure I'm giving back and doing what I can to serve him.
Well, the other thing I know is that when you're dealing with the sickness of a loved one and the journey she was going through, that you still had to go on the air for those 3 years, at least at times when you weren't feeling it. You weren't feeling like going on and being this high energy guy that just could tell great stories. How did God pull you through that?
You know, Steve, there were times, so many times, when I wished I had a job in a cubicle or an office where I could close the door and hide. But unfortunately, I had to do my job in front of America on live TV every night. And you know, I would pray so hard. And I developed a technique. This may sound a little odd, but it's in my book, Hurricane of Love. I wrote that I would go to my mailbox before my show, and I would open it and literally feel like I was putting my problems in the mailbox. And I would say, I'll pick you up after the show, but I have to go do a show. And I would close the door, and that somehow helped me to compartmentalize.
That's really good, and that's a life skill that many of us can't compartmentalize. I like to tell my employees all the time when they're having bad days to go back out the door and shake it off and walk back in and don't come in with it. Because you have to think that way. It's hard. I mean, you can't – some of the things we deal with in life, they're just hard to forget at the front door, but – that's what the Lord does. I mean, he wants us to do that.
You know, Steve, there was a night or two, one night in particular that I wrote about, when just literally seconds before the other host was throwing to me and the tally light was going to come on, when both of my arms went numb.
Oh, no.
The studio started spinning on me. I looked up and I saw the lights going by and I just cried out, "Dear Lord, I need to do this show. You've got to help me." And he would somehow, things would calm. And when that light came on, I was ready. And somehow through it all, and that was a tough 3 years, Steve, God allowed me to keep my numbers up high. And there were times when I wasn't able to prepare like I always did, because I always felt like I was a hard worker, and what I didn't have in talent, I would make up for in hard work. So I usually was in 4 hours before a show, prepping my products, looking up things on the computer, meeting with my guests, planning the demonstrations. But boy, I know that last summer and fall before Beth passed, that I was leaning on God's arms and he carried me.
Oh, I wish our show hosts would work 4 hours before they do a show. It would help so much.
It's all about prep, you know. You got to know what you're talking about.
Well, I also know that you've done a wheelbarrow full of sports interviews with celebrities and athletes. Give us a little bit of insight to that part of your life.
Well, it was interesting because in the 1990s, sports memorabilia became very big. And guys like Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle and Ted Williams, all the greats were, you know, offering their autographed merchandise at reasonable prices. And it was something that all of America could afford, because QVC has to be very general, very wide. It has to be something for the vast majority of people. And back in the day, you could get a Mickey Mantle autograph for $39. And these guys, you know, were the greats of all time. But later on, these sports agents, the off-field agents, got involved, and they charged a ton for their autograph, and they priced the average guy out. But anyway, I had the opportunity to, one day, I had the longest and the final interview with Joe DiMaggio. And what an honor. And I had read everything about Joe that I could. I thought, how many guys get to interview Joe DiMaggio? He was such a private person. And I was going to do 3 hours with him on the air. And so I lived at the library. I looked up everything I could learn, and I knew not to ask him about Marilyn Monroe or his son, Joe Jr. He had a very tough relationship with his son. His son, Joe Jr., wasn't a good athlete, and Joe had had him with Dorothy Arnold, an actress. So there was no love, father-son relationship, really. And I knew not to ask Joe about those areas. So he wanted to meet me at 1 p.m, and the show wasn't until 7 p.m. And I thought it would be a 10-minute interview. I thought he'd tell me what was in bounds and what was out of bounds. So I walk into the green room after he arrived, and I said, "Mr. DiMaggio, what an honor." He said, "Dan, call me Joe." And he said, "Let's talk baseball."
I love
it. So we sat and talked baseball for 6 hours straight.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
He never told me what to, he never told me what to ask him or what not. We went out on the air and we did a 3 hour show. Afterwards, he wanted to talk to me for another hour. And a week later, a dozen autographed Joe DiMaggio baseballs showed up at my house with a nice thank you note for from him. But, you know, Joe was an interesting guy. He was really upset about the ball players today making the money that they did. He felt like he was the greatest. He only signed for $100,000, one contract, and he was pretty miserable. And when he died, his right-hand man, his attorney, immediately told the nurse to get that World Series ring off of his finger. It was from his rookie year. And so my my moral of the story there about Joe was, you know, give and it shall be given to you. If you don't give, they're going to be taking what you've got off your dead body. And Joe never really learned the joy of giving.
He, did he lose his
ring?
He was
a depressionary.
That doc kept
Pardon?
The ring? Did the doc-
yeah, his attorney said that Joe had promised that to him. And that he, Joe had like 9 or 10 World Series rings, but that's the only one he wore. Mm-hmm. And his attorney knew that would be worth money. And then I got to work with Mickey Mantle a lot. And the first time I worked with him, a little boy asked me if, well, actually his dad asked me if I could ask Mickey to sign the baseball for him. And, you know, this guy, little boy had the Yankees hat on and the dad was like, you know, we love Mickey. Could you ask him? And when I asked Mickey if he would sign it, he went off on me. I mean, every curse word I could hear. And I went back and I said, guys, he wishes he could sign, but he can't. The memorabilia company's here, but he really feels bad. And so I covered for him. Well, years later, after he went through Betty Ford, he came to QVC and he wanted to talk to me privately. And we went into a makeup room and he closed the door and he turned around. And he had tears pouring down his face. I said, Mickey, what's wrong? He said, I owe you a big apology. I remember when you asked me to sign that boy's baseball. I said, you remember? That was 10 years ago. He goes, do you know why I hated signing autographs, Stan? I said, why? He said, I had no self-esteem. I was an alcoholic and I knew it. And I, big deal, I could hit a baseball. And you know, Steve, I'm sitting there thinking, this is surreal. I'm with the greatest hero on the greatest sports team in history. And he's telling me he has no self-esteem. Wow. And I just think if the world knew that these people who we think have it all really have nothing without Jesus, I'll tell you, that's what made saying goodbye to my wife so hard. She was my hero. I interviewed every childhood hero I ever had, every celebrity. And I'll tell you, I'd take 5 minutes with my wife any day.
Amen. Well, that's a good transition. I wanted our audience to catch this part of you, to hear these stories and to know you as a man, because I think it makes Beth more real to us as we all will listen to your story of loss, because now we know you better and understand some of your life and your career. So let's just start when you met and married Beth. How did that begin?
Well, I was working for a Christian TV station in Chicago, and I was on the train one afternoon. It was late September 1978, and the train stopped at LaGrange, and this really cute girl got on, and she sat in the seat right in front of me, but I didn't get a good look at her face. And I kept looking in the window as the train was moving, trying to see. And finally, I don't know what possessed me. I tapped her on the shoulder and I said, I'm trying to read this book and it's really boring. Would you mind if I join you? And she gave me the biggest, brightest smile. And she said, sure. And so I went up and we talked all the way into Union Station. We got off at the train. I said, where do you work? She said, the Civic Opera Building. I said, you're kidding me. That's where I work. I worked in a TV station on top of the Civic Opera Building on the corner of Madison and Wacker. And we get to the building and I said, I figure, you know, I'm on a roll here. She's saying yes and sure to everything. I said,
wait a
would
minute.
You like to have lunch?
Are you QVCing your bride to be?
Yeah, this was before my QVC career.
You're already doing it.
So I said, would you like to go up to the third floor and grab a bite to eat before you go to work? And she said, sure. I'm thinking, wow, this is really going well. So we get our food. We go through the line. I go to pay and I go into my pockets. Nothing. I look in my wallet.
No.
It's empty. My briefcase is empty. Steve, I didn't have a dime on me. She
what
had
a day.
To pay for that first meal. And she said she wondered if I was a con artist.
She had your number.
She did. I promised to take her to lunch later that week. I took her to an Italian restaurant that I couldn't afford. I think the bill was $20. It about put me in the poorhouse.
Yes.
But that meal led to thousands of others, because that girl was Beth Johnson. who became Beth Wheeler.
So how long did it take you to marry her?
You know, it took me 6 years.
Oh, my goodness.
I am a slow mover. Well, I wasn't making any money. I didn't think I could support a wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought my
she
parents
give
were divorced
up on you.
When I was...
That's good. She waited.
She did. She did. She finally told me to take a hike and started dating another guy. And then that got me. I'm like, okay, let's do it.
Good.
So I asked her to marry her. We had used to go up to Michigan and visit my dad, and we'd often stop into my grandparents' home. They were in their late 70s, and we all would also always hear them laughing from the other room, and we'd go in, and they'd be playing Parcheesi with their neighbors. And we thought, we want to grow old together and play Parcheesi, we used to say. So
what a goal.
So when I asked her to marry me, I put the ring in a Parcheesi box, and when I pulled out the Parcheesi box, she knew what it meant.
She did. She already had your number on that, too.
Yes, she did.
That's amazing. So tell us a little bit about your life together. Let us get a good picture of her.
Well, she was an amazing woman, Steve. She had so much patience and kindness. And I named the book Hurricane of Love because my niece, the day that Beth passed, wrote in a blog, she said, "My Aunt Beth's love was like a hurricane. It hit everyone in its path." Mm-hmm. And I've never known someone who was so loving and so non-judgmental. You know, she was friends with the cashier at the grocery store, with the pharmacist, with the janitors at the hospital, with the CEO. She treated everyone the same. And anyone who walked into our house was treated like family and made to feel like it. She had a singular ability to make you feel like you knew her all your life the instant you met her. And I can't tell you how many people have told me that, that they've never met someone that had an ability to make them feel at home. Beth was home to a lot of people, including me, for 31 years. Well, actually, we were together 37 years, if you had those 6 years that it took me to ask her to marry her.
A long time. That's good.
Yes.
And so your life changed when you had that diagnosis of cancer. What did it do to your life?
It really did.
What happened?
You know, it instantly turned our priorities upside down, but ultimately right side up.
Mm-hmm.
From the moment we got that news, Steve, I went into a constant state of prayer. I mean, you read about pray without ceasing.
Yes.
I was praying without ceasing in my sleep all the time, praying that God would heal her. I believed with everything I had that God was going to heal her right up until her last breath. I believed she was going to jump out of bed, even after she'd stopped all treatment. I believed, but God chose to ultimately heal her. You know, I remember thinking at the time after she died, thinking all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to his purpose. And I'd say, really, God, stage 4 cancer can mm-hmm. work together for good?
Yeah, tell me
you know,
about
Steve,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But 3 years down the road now, I see what God's done in my life through the book and through a ministry I started called Fearless Faith. I retired from QVC at the end of 2017, and they were so good to me. They gave me a huge send-off, and they really understood. I had lunch with the CEO, and he said, "Why are you leaving?" And I said, "Mike, God has called me to a new work, and mm-hmm. I believe that this is the Lord telling me to do it." And he said, "Well, then we're behind you, and we support you all the way," and they were great. But God has reached a lot of people with my book. A lot of people, hundreds of people have written me on Facebook and said that my chapter on grief has helped them to get unstuck.
Hmm.
I've heard from people, Steve, who have been stuck in their grief for 5-10 years. They said after their spouse died, they just can't go on. And I just don't feel that's what God wants. I had a counselor who really snapped me out of my depression. It was about 4 months after she passed, and I was literally dragging myself out of bed and dragging myself into work and trying to find joy. And she said, "Dan, Beth is not judging you. She's in heaven with Jesus, and they're both mm-hmm. applauding you. They're cheering you on. She's saying, finish your race."
Yes.
And boy, did that do it. I was like, I can do this for Beth, and I can do it for God. And you know, I know where she is. And mm-hmm. and looking back now, I see that God had a purpose in everything. And he's, you know, not because of anything I've done, but he's using what I'm trying to do. And, you know, I think he wants us all to use what's in our hand. And what was in my hand was the ability to speak and some persuasive skills. And I told the Lord, I'll go speak anytime, any place that you call me to go. And I'm receiving and feeling so much joy and fulfillment from it. And it's all because of Beth.
Well, that's great. Now, I can't let you go. I wanted to let you finish because you're under the anointing that's so powerful right now. I could hear it. But what I wanted to ask you when you started speaking about grief, I could just feel people reaching out through this microphone to this show saying, tell me more. How did you teach them to grieve? Talk about that part of your book that would help us.
Yes. Well, first of all, I'd like to say to those of us who know someone is going through a hard time, who's facing an illness or caring for someone who has an illness, you know, so many people are afraid to go to those people because they say they don't know what to say. And I say, don't worry about what you're saying. Just show up. It's called, you know, the ministry of presence. Just be there good. For them. Just hug them. Take something to eat. You can always use food because you're so busy caring for that your loved one, or your loved one maybe is too sick to prepare anything. And we need to reach out to those people. And, you know, that year of first is brutal. I've written a few articles about it based on my book that, you know, my wife passed away on October 30th, where the first holiday was 3 weeks later, Thanksgiving. And we had it at my daughter's in-laws, and they left an empty place setting and an empty chair in honor of Beth. And I could hardly look at it, Steve. I just wanted to eat and get out of there. And then I didn't want to put up a Christmas tree. I didn't want to hear Christmas music. Everything is so hard. It's so sad. Every song reminded her of her. And I remember when my daughters came over and said, we're putting up a tree, and every ornament had a memory, and there's one ornament that had Beth and my picture on it when we were young, and I just broke down. You know, I couldn't do it. But and then, you know, just before Christmas was our anniversary, and my one daughter said, Dad, let's do something. I don't want you sitting home. So I took him up to New York, and we went and saw The Lion King. My grandkids love that. But even that, everywhere I looked, I was like, Beth should be here. Where is she?
Yes.
And then you have, you know, Christmas and New Year's, and her birthday was February 3rd. And Steve, it was like waves just kept hitting me. And I thought, it's never going to end. But, you know, in February was around when that counselor really helped me. And I went to some grief counseling. And as spring came and I realized that God wasn't done with me, Beth's race was done, but I still had a lot of work to do. I started to get more hopeful, and I started to handle those days a little bit better. And I will tell you that 3 years later, February 3rd was my wife's birthday. So just a couple weeks ago after church, my whole family went out to lunch, my daughters, my grandkids, and we just talked about Beth. And you know what? We're at the point now we laugh and we smile and we remember her fondly. And so I would say to those people, if you're grieving right now, if you're listening to this, hold on. God is with you. He said he's near and close to the brokenhearted, and he won't leave you. And on those days, you will learn to celebrate their life. I now celebrate my wife on all of those days, holidays, her birthday. Good. And you know what, Steve? I feel closer to her on those days now.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's with you. You know that.
Yeah. And you know she's not far away.
I know. You mentioned something that was intriguing to me, your divine appointment that you had at the hospital. I think our listeners would like to hear about that.
Yes, I was trying to stay strong in the hospital room in front of my daughters, in front of Beth, and it was getting near the end. It was about a month, 3 weeks to a month before she passed, and I just could tell things were not going well. I knew we were in this final stage, and I got on my daughter Kirsten said, Dad, you need to take a break. You've been living here. You've been working late at night, because I would be with her all day in the hospital and then run into QVC at the last minute to do a show. And I have to tell you, I wasn't able to prep like I usually do. And God somehow helped me, because I just wanted to be with her every minute. When you asked me how my life changed, boy, my priorities were, you know, just prayer and being with Beth and doing anything I could to serve her. And it was an honor. And I never thought I would be able to do that, because at the end, she had lost control of her bodily functions and she wanted me to be her nurse. It was embarrassing for her. And you know, Steve, it was an honor. it was an honor to clean her up, to help her to the bathroom, to care for her. My daughter, oldest daughter, is a nurse, and she taught me how to be a nurse. And I knew that she would do it for me 1,000 times over. One day she looked at me in the hospital after I'd gotten her back in bed, and she said, "What would I do without you?" And I said, "You will never need to know."
Yeah.
I said, "Beth, I'm not leaving you for 1 second." And so God, I'm sorry, God was with me through it all. And, you know, so this one day I walked down the hall. I was going to take a break, like my daughter said, just go to the health club and take a shower. And I saw the elevator doors open and no one was on the elevator. And as soon as the doors closed, I lost it.
Yeah.
I just started weeping. I was bent over and I stepped off the elevator and was leaning against the wall. And all of a sudden I hear, "Mr. Wheeler, Mr. Wheeler, what's wrong?" And I looked up and it was our doctor. And I'll tell you, God, you talk about divine intervention. This man was a Christian. And the first day I met him, he asked me how I was doing. And I said, "I'd been talking to the great physician about my wife." And he said, "We're going to get along fabulously. That's who I talk to about every patient." And he just glowed with God's love. So he comes running up to me. This is a medical doctor in hospital, throws his arms around me and says, "What's wrong, Mr. Wheeler?" And I said, "You know, Dr. Kind, I just feel like it's just going really bad. And I've been praying and praying, and I'm wondering sometimes if God's hearing my prayers." And he looked at me and he said, "Oh, you wonder if he's hearing your prayers? Well, let me tell you what just happened to me." He said, "3 minutes ago, I was right at this elevator door, ready to get on this elevator. But something told me I needed to walk back to the cafeteria." He said, "I walked all the way down this long hall, got to the cafeteria, and I thought, what am I doing? I've got to get upstairs." He said, "Mr. Wheeler, I'm never late for my appointments. I have 22 people I need to see right now. I came back and saw you get off this elevator, and I knew why God delayed me. He had me here right at this moment to tell you he loves you very much. He hears every prayer. And you know that whether he heals your wife now or he chooses to heal her ultimately in heaven, you know she'll be with Jesus and you will see her again." And he got on the elevator and left. And I walked out blown away, thinking that God cared enough about me to change this man's schedule, to be there, to intersect in my life. God intervenes in the affairs of men. And he did it that day. And I know he did.
Yes. Wow. What a story, brother. How am I supposed to talk?
Wow. Well, I'm sorry. I still get choked up,
yeah,
you know, three plus years later. It's still... You know, she was an amazing woman, but God's goodness, I'm more overwhelmed with his goodness and pulling me through it all than I am sadness. I mean,
yes, of course,
I miss her all the time, but I know she wouldn't want to come back. She's in heaven. She's with Jesus.
So tell me about your children and grandchildren. I mean, that's a story that I always want to ask because they're the ones I worry about most in loss. And how did they cope and how are they now?
Yeah. That was a real tough thing, you know, of course, dealing with my loss, but knowing that my youngest daughter, knowing that Beth wouldn't be there for her wedding or the birth of her children. She was there for my oldest daughter's wedding and knew two of our grandsons. The one grandson was only two when she passed. But, you know, those little boys just loved her. Cole, especially, he was six at the time. He would march into her bedroom and, you know, Beth was all swollen and she had rashes all over. She looked, you know, it would be scary for a child, but not for this little guy. He would get up there and hug her and kiss her. And she lit up. She could be completely out of it. And that little boy would bring his sunshine in the room and she would light up. And, you know, seeing those kids and my daughters and the heartache was very difficult. That's why we really circled close as a family, and she loved them, and we talk about her a lot so that they will remember her. But I have to tell you the most amazing thing. My book, Hurricane of Love, it's by Westbow Press, a Christian publisher, division of Thomas Nelson, and the final chapter is called A Gift from Above. Now, that day I met Beth on the train when she was the cute girl and I tapped her on the shoulder, that was September 21st, 1978. Because of that, Beth and I, we loved music and our favorite song was September by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And there's a line in the first line of the song says, "Do you remember the 21st night of September. Mm-hmm. Well, after Beth passed, I told my daughters and their family, I said, I want to take everyone down to Florida. Let's go somewhere warm. So I took them to Captiva Island for a week during the following winter in March. And as we were there on the beach one day, Kirsten told us she was pregnant. And we thought, boy, wouldn't it be cool if she had a little girl, because she had two boys. And she told me, she said, if I have a girl, I'll name her after mommy. My daughter, Kirsten's middle name is Brooke, and my wife's name was Elizabeth. I called her Beth. She said I would name her Brooke Elizabeth. Her oldest son is Cole Daniel. And I said, wow, that'd be cool. Well, summer came and fall, and she progressed nicely. She wasn't due until October. One day I'm at QVC and I get a text from her saying, Dad, I think I'm going to have this baby tonight. And I wrote her back. I said, Kirsten, perfect timing, because I'm not on the air tonight. I just have one more meeting. I'll go home and get Kelsey. And she was going to have the baby at a hospital right by QVC. Mm-hmm. Well, I finished texting her and I looked at the date of my phone and I said, oh, dear God, would you do this? This would be too amazing. It was September 21st. And that little girl, Brooke Elizabeth, was born the 21st night of September. And people may say coincidence. I know it was God saying, I love you. I never left you. This little girl is going to be such a joy in your life. And I felt like Beth was there with us in that hospital room. And that was a gift. And I call that chapter a gift from above. That when God gives a gift, it says every perfect gift, every good gift comes from above, from the Father of lights. And the way he did it was perfect. A little girl, Brooke Elizabeth, on the 21st night of September, something that was so meaningful to me.
Well, it means a lot to me just listening to it, and I'm just now hearing it. So we're running out of time, and I want to talk to you so much more, but just tell us what you hope that people will take from this book. What is your wish in writing? And I know it wasn't a cathartic process. I mean, it ends up happening for you. But what do you hope that readers get from the book?
Boy, that's a great question, Steve. My biggest hope is that they will truly learn to live in the moment. You know, I'm so aware of people on their cell phones and on the internet, and I walk into restaurants and you see a couple sitting across from each other and they're both on their phones. I say, put away the phones, be present, have a cup of coffee with your loved one. The little things in life are the big things.
Yes.
I would give anything to have a cup of coffee with my wife again. You know, she, so many times we have this little sitting room and she'd sit in there and have coffee in the morning, and I'd walk through and she'd say, Cakeys, that was our nickname for each other. Cakeys, come sit, have a cup of coffee. And regrettably, Steve, so many times I said, Beth, I've got a major celebrity on tonight. I've got so much prep. I don't have time to sit and have coffee. Well, once we got that diagnosis, I always sat. That became priority number one. Yeah. And so I say, live in the present. Tell the people you love that you love them. And if you have someone who is sick or you're facing an illness, pour all of your love into that illness, into that loved one. You'll never get that time back, and you will never regret it. And, you know, you will truly be able to look back and say, God truly does work together. He works all things together for good. And God will never leave you, even in your darkest hour. He never left us. He was with us. He showed me so many times that he was there. So those are my main messages. Live in the present. Love everyone that you love. Tell them you love them. And give it all to God, and know that he'll never leave you.
Amen. What good words. So how do we find your book? Where is it now? Is it on Amazon?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. It's got a lot of great reviews. If you want to read them there, it's also available. I have a landing page called hurricaneoflove.com.
Okay.
Hurricaneoflove.com. You can go there. You can see an interview that my publisher did with me about the book, some comments, and I think I've got a couple interviews I've done there, but there's also a place you can order it. It takes you right to my ordering page at westbowpress.com. And I'm using a lot of my personal proceeds to fund a ministry I founded called Fearless Faith. And so if they go through my publisher, westbowpress.com, and the online bookstore, the royalties higher, and that helps my ministry. But it's also available other places, wherever books are sold. And I'm just thankful God gave me this book to share. And I want people to know Beth Wheeler. She was an amazing woman, Steve.
Well, I'm thankful that I had this chance to meet you.
Oh, thank you. I feel the same way, and I'm so appreciative. Thank you so much. It's funny, I'm about to get on a plane to go to Virginia Beach to be on the 700 Club. God is opening up doors to share this message.
I pray that
message.
More and more doors open for you. So I've got to ask you one more nosy question when I get my composure back.
And, Steve.
Just to break the ice for me, I got to know, did you ever interview any St. Louis Cardinal? Any of the old guys, Stan Musial, Lou Brock, any of those good guys?
I did. I had Ozzie Smith on a couple times.
Oh, you did Ozzie? Did you backflips
on him? the wizard. I know I've interviewed a few others. You know, I'd have to look. I wrote a book years ago called Best Seat in the House, but Ozzie, I never interviewed Stan the Man. I really wanted to.
Oh, my. You had all those other good guys from the Yankees. Come on.
Oh, I know. I mean, I had guys like Hank Aaron and Ernie Banks and Johnny Bench and Barry Bonds and Darren Dalton, Joe DiMaggio. I mean, you know, the list goes on and on.
I want to hear about some Cardinals. Come on, work with me here.
Well, let's see.
I think that was it.
Smith,
huh?
Bruce Sutter, I think.
Bob Gibson, Lou Brock.
You know what? I had Lou Brock on. I did have Lou Brock, and he was amazing. I wish I could interview Bob Gibson. See, I'm a Tigers fan.
Oh, you wouldn't do that.
And we beat Bob Gibson in Game 7 of the 68 World Series.
I don't want to talk about it. I'm still hurt.
Kurt Flood got his cleats caught in center field on a Jim Northrop triple.
Yes, Kurt Flood. He had a lot of impact on baseball history as well in a much different way.
Boy, he did.
I've got to let our listeners get back to their day, and I know that I just pray that your book really blesses people the way you've blessed us on this podcast. Anything that you'd like to say to our listeners before we quit?
Well, I hope that they'll pick up Hurricane of Love, My Journey with Beth Wheeler. She was an amazing woman. And one final thing, after she passed, I got a card from all the nurses at this major hospital. They used to all come in early to fight over her, to see who would treat her, because she was so kind. And one nurse wrote, Beth Wheeler helped me rediscover why I went into nursing in the first place. And when she would leave a hospital, they would line the halls and hug her and cry and wish her well.
Yeah.
She was that kind of a woman. You know, give, and it shall be given to you.
That's a good word and just a perfect way to end this podcast. I love you. I'll be praying for you and for your book to have the success it deserves. The book is Hurricane of Love. You can find it at hurricaneoflove.com. Or, of course, at Amazon and Christian Booksellers. The author is Dan Wheeler, my new best friend. I love you so much and heard so much from you today. And I'm blessed because of you.
Thank you, Dr. Green. It's been a blessing talking to you. Thank you, sir, for caring and for what you do.
This is the Green Lines Podcast. I'm Steve Green on the Charisma Podcast Network. God bless you all.
Choosing a college is a big decision, the kind students don't want to make without doing their research. And while normal campus visits are great, wouldn't it be better to test drive a school first? At Liberty's College for a Weekend, students spend 4 whole days on campus, live in a dorm, attend classes, and go to events like NCAA Division I games or concerts from big-name Christian artists. Liberty also has info sessions for parents, so families are welcome to come out with their student and see just what Liberty's all about. If you'd like to know more about Liberty or their upcoming events, text LUCFAW to 839-858. Again, text LUCFAW to 839-858.
Thank you for listening to the Green Lines Podcast. If you would like a copy of Dr. Green's book, Love Leads, visit loveleadsbook.com. To contact Dr. Green, email greenlines@charismamedia.com.